Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, 20 years on from the historic meeting of prayer for peace in Assisi, Pope Benedict hails the prophetic initiative of his predecessor and reiterates that religious faith can never be used as a pretext for war. Promoting the beauty of God's creation, one papal portrait artist shares his secrets. And Pope Benedict looks forward to his forthcoming trip to his homeland next weekend. In his Angelus address, he also looks at the life of St. Gregory the Great, whose teachings, he says, inspired the fathers of the Second Vatican Council. Welcome to the programme. Over 200 religious leaders from across the world have gathered in Assisi for a two-day encounter, marking the 20th anniversary of the first historic meeting of prayer for peace in the hilltop Umbrian town. On October 27, 1986, Pope John Paul II led representatives of all the world's major religions in an unprecedented day of prayer for peace, culminating in a common declaration outside the great basilica dedicated to that icon of peace, St. Francis of Assisi.
I see this gathering today as a very significant sign of the commitment of all of you to the cause of peace. It is this commitment that has brought us to Assisi. The fact that we profess different creeds does not detract from the significance of this day. On the contrary, the churches, ecclesial communities, and world religions are showing that they are eager for the good of humanity.
Every year since then, the Rome-based community of Saint Egidio has organized ecumenical and interfaith gatherings to build on that spirit of Assisi. The community has also organized this week's summit of religious leaders, politicians, journalists, and academics to discuss ways of promoting greater understanding and reconciliation between the great cultures and religious traditions. My colleague Ema McCarthy is in Assisi following this important anniversary event. She looks back to the first day of prayer for peace and its legacy over the past two decades.
Dear friends, I have the honor and pleasure of welcoming all of you for our World Day of Prayer in this town of Assisi.
The first World Day of Prayer for Peace, convoked by the late John Paul II in St. Francis City 20 years ago, was unprecedented. International media invaded the small hilltop town to record and witness the incredible sight it saw, gathered alongside the Pope, representatives of the great world religions, from the Dalai Lama to the Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury, all joined in the common search for greater global collaboration.
The coming together so many religious leaders to pray is in itself an invitation today to the world to become aware that there exists another dimension of peace and another way of promoting the peace, which is not a result of negotiation, political compromises, or economic bargaining.
A process of interreligious dialogue got underway there, which the community of Sant'Egidio took especially to heart. The organization of international encounters of religions subsequently became a central part of this community's mission. Year after year, these meetings have progressed across Italy's main cities and European capitals, and more recently, Washington, D.C., offering an opportunity for dialogue and for religious differences to be surmounted.
È un appuntamento particolare perché è il ventesimo e abbiamo deciso di ritornare a Assisi.
Looking forward to this special anniversary appointment, Professor Riccardi, founder of the Rome-based ecclesial movement, explained that the meetings are as relevant today as they were 20 years ago.
Io direi che lo spirito e la realtà di Assisi.
He said that at a time marked by terrorism and war, as well as by efforts toward dialogue and reconciliation, religion has assumed a prominent role in public life and in the conflict of identities. Religions, therefore, are ever more exposed to the danger of becoming instruments of extremism. Over 2 days, 12 panels of experts will try to address these threats and also themes of spiritual, social and political relevance, concentrating on what the religions have in common, the social challenges and spiritual aims that bind them. Issues such as religious indifference, the family, the desire for God, codependence in the culture of war and fighting poverty. The conference attendees will also look specifically at the continents of Asia and Africa, as well as discussing the future of the Middle East. Participants include Grand Rabbi Cohen de Haifa, Ibrahim Edzedin, Special Advisor to the United Arab Emirates, Christian Orthodox leaders, representatives from the World Council of Churches, the Lutheran Federation and other Christian confessions. Pope Benedict has sent a Vatican delegation, including Cardinal Walter Kasper, head of the Vatican Council for Promoting Christian Unity, that will be headed by Cardinal Paul Poupart, president of the Pontifical Council for Culture and Interreligious Dialogue.
Direi che da una parte il dilagare della violenza sotto tutte le sue forme.
Speaking before his departure, the cardinal dwelt on this year's theme, which he said, given the current situation in the Middle East, has a clear relevance. He said the spreading of violence in all its forms, such as war or terrorism, and its omnipresence in world media has led to a greater awareness of our common responsibility in this globalized world to work for peace. Citing St. Paul, he said, at the moment, we are living a contradiction by not doing the good we want, but the evil we do not want. The cardinal then underlined that what is important is that the world's religions distance themselves from this wanton violence. This, he said, is particularly important regarding the Middle East. That it's not the religions in the area that are in conflict with one another, but mankind. Every crime carried out in the name of religion, he reiterated, is a crime against religion. Therefore, from Assisi, the reflection of the world's great religions on dialogue between cultures will be highlighted as key to diffusing the conflict of civilizations and to providing an axis of a globalization that is not merely market-driven. I'm Eimear McCarthy.
Bishop Vincenzo Paglia is spiritual director of the St. Egidio lay community. Despite the momentous political changes that have taken place over the past 2 decades, he says the so-called spirit of Assisi has borne significant fruit and is more necessary now than ever before.
The world changed a lot, and we need to continue the same spirit in order to answer to many questions, many problems, many conflicts. In these 20 years, I could show several positive points, several situations which are resolved because of the spirit of Assisi. One example is the peace reached in Mozambique after 70 years of war. And we started to reflect about this peace exactly inside of the spirit. The same happened in Albania, the same happened in the Balkans, but the same happened, for example, in Central America. We gather several times people from different faiths in order to help this process. And John Paul II, during the war in the Balkans and after the 11th of September, we gathered together here in Assisi, because we believe that it is necessary to push people to gather together in order to understand that the future has to be built with our common effort. If we are alone, if we are one against the other, we continue to create new conflicts, new terrible situation for the future of the humanity. And Pope Benedict understood this and exhorted us to continue in this way, clarifying that the spirit of Assisi is not a syncretic way, is exactly the contrary. We cannot find, it is impossible, find a common religion. But I am sure that in the roots of different religions, that is the peace, that is the love. So, in this sense, every time we are realized these meetings, we go inside our faith and we discovered a great energy of peace, of love, a great energy to be together in order to construct a common future of the world.
Egidio's spokesman Mario Marazziti has been one of the principal organisers of this year's 20th anniversary summit of religious leaders. He says over the years these gatherings have developed an important collection of teachings on reconciliation and peace, teachings which can be put into practice in situations of conflict all over the world.
After 20 years in Assisi, we have some testimonials and some leaders of peace, reconciliation and prayer who have attended almost all the 20 years of meetings, of interfaith meeting, the first one promoted by John Paul II and the others promoted by the community of Sant'Egidio, that were also the place where the pontificate continued its teaching with a real magistero, with a real teaching of peace, with a message given year by year that is now like a continuous preaching of how peace is the very heart core of the gospel. But we also find again the need for prayer as the special tool that believers have to build peace. And in a moment in which the world is tempted by the clash of civilization and by resentment, religions and religious leaders, as well as secular thinkers and opinion leaders, will be together, one by the other one, to find a way to avoid simplification, devilization of the other, any kind of increasement of hatred, and any instrumentalization of religion to make war and to justify violence and terrorism. I am sure that in Assisi, religions, in the most solemn way, will take the leadership of real pure religion, and that extremists will be put aside, and that any attempt to use religion to justify crimes will be put aside and banned.
Benedict XVI sent a special message to participants at this Assisi gathering, hailing what he called the prophetic initiative of his predecessor John Paul II back in 1986, and reiterating that religious faith can never be used to justify violence or conflict between peoples and nations. The Pope also stressed there must be no attempt to confuse the principles of faith or to give way to religious relativism. He said prayers should be offered in a way that is characteristic of each faith tradition. The message was read to participants at the opening session of the summit by the Bishop of Assisi, Domenico Sorrentino. Emma McCarthy was on hand and brings us all the details.
Peace, where it exists today, is under threat. We live in a pluricultural, multi-religious society where all too often religious differences lead to instability, violence, and even war. Therefore, future generations must be educated to peace by deepening their own religious identities and their knowledge of others. Only then can we halt the spreading of sectarianism and avoid syncretism. These were the key points of an 8-page message to participants in the World Meeting of Religions in Dialogue for Peace, underway here in Assisi. The message was written by Pope Benedict XVI and read by Archbishop Domenico Sorrentino of Assisi at the inauguration of the 2-day event Monday morning. The Pope invited all those present to clarify that religion cannot be used to foment hatred and difference, that religion is an instrument of peace. He called on the congregation of spiritual leaders and representatives from Islam, Buddhism, the International Jewish Congress, and Christian churches to renew the commitment to collaboration and dialogue, a commitment that was first expressed in this very city 20 years ago. The Pope's message looked back to that unprecedented gathering in the city of St. Francis in 1986, convoked by his predecessor, John Paul II. Unfortunately, writes the Pope, that dream of peace which seemed possible following the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War, now at the dawn of the third millennium, seems distant. New threats of terrorism and armed conflict are in act today. Men are misusing religion, as was foreseen by Pope John Paul. These geopolitical tensions, which grip many regions, continues the message, give the impression that cultural and religious differences are at the heart of the current instability. In order to correct this myth, initiatives such as these meetings organized by the community of Sant'Egidio to promote interreligious dialogue are as relevant today as they were then. Here Pope Benedict underlined that conflicts cannot be attributed to religion but to the cultural limitations of mankind. Cultural, political and economic solutions, he says, are ways to build peace, but they are not its foundation. First of all, peace must be built in the heart. The Holy Father called for a rebirth in religious education. The power of prayer cannot be undermined, he writes. One of the highlights of the 1986 meeting was the uniting value of prayer, when the exponents of the various religions prayed each in their own way, but all within the context of the meeting. This, he noted, was an example of how separate religious identities can be united in their intent, despite their ideological diversities. We cannot misinterpret the spirit of Assisi 1986, continues the Pope, as expressed in the light of the Second Vatican Council's Nostra Aetate and reaffirmed by John Paul II. Dialogue between religions on issues of common interest does not translate into a search for a religious consensus on issues of faith. Syncretism based on relativistic concepts leads to confusion and therefore must be avoided. But the Pope's message appealed above all to the world's youth. Many young people's lives in many parts of the world are marked by violence, some ideologies teaching them to hate, to take revenge, the seeds of ancient rivalries passed on from generation to generation. If we are to contrast this tradition of sectarianism and hate which generates future violence, we must cultivate the spirit of dialogue between peoples of different religions and cultures, as well as encourage a deepening of our individual spiritual identity. Therefore, concludes Pope Benedict, in the light of St. Francis, 800 years on from his original conversion, prayer and dialogue remain the only channel to true and lasting peace, each religion according to its own tradition, so that the convergence of different religions does not give way to relativism which negates truth, but instead promotes the solid image of a brotherhood of peace. From the World Meeting of Religions in Assisi, I'm Emma McCarthy.
And that ends our coverage of the 20th anniversary gathering taking place there in Assisi. But at this same time tomorrow, Tracy McClure will be following the event and hearing from some of the many representatives of the other Christian churches and world religions present at the two-day encounter. At his Angelus address on Sunday, Pope Benedict looked forward to his forthcoming trip to his native Bavaria next weekend. In his words to those gathered outside his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, he also spoke of the life of Saint Gregory the Great, whose teachings, he said, inspired the fathers of the Second Vatican Council. My colleague Charles Collins tells us more.
Pope Benedict told the German people that he was looking forward to visiting them next week in Germany.
Ich wünsche euch allen einen gesegneten Tag und freue mich auf das Wiedersehen mit vielen Landsleuten in der nächsten Woche in Bayern.
Speaking in his own language after his Angelus, the Holy Father said he was looking forward to seeing his countrymen. The Pope leaves on Saturday for a five-day trip to his native Bavaria. Before reciting the Angelus, Pope Benedict turned his attention to the 6th century Pope, St. Gregory the Great.
Il calendario romano ricorda oggi, 3 settembre, San Gregorio Magno, Papa.
The Holy Father said St. Gregory provides a model not just for clerics, but also for civil leaders. Before serving in the church, Gregory was an imperial official, and Pope Benedict said that he distinguished himself for his administrative abilities and his moral integrity.
A questo insegnamento, sempre attuale, si sono ispirati I padri del Concilio Vaticano II.
He said that Gregory was also an inspiration for the Second Vatican Council. The great doctor of the Church once wrote that the life of a shepherd of souls must be a balanced synthesis of contemplation and action. Pope Benedict said that these words inspired the Council Fathers in their deliberations. After reciting the Angelus, the Pope spoke to pilgrims in various languages, including English.
In today's Gospel, Jesus invites us to purity of heart and sincere obedience to God's law. May your visit to Rome strengthen you in the love of the Lord and in joyful fidelity to His holy word. God bless you all.
While most pilgrims and tourists are happy just to catch a glimpse of the Pope at his audiences or during his visits abroad, one man we're going to hear from now has been able to get to know Pope Benedict a little better. Russian artist Igor Babaylov has spent some time with the Pope, talking, sketching, and taking photographs for a portrait that he's been commissioned to paint. And it's not the artist's first papal portrait either. Igor also painted his predecessor, John Paul II, depicting him surrounded by a group of children, a painting which now hangs in Castel Gandolfo. In addition, the artist has completed works of many other world leaders, including US President George Bush, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and former South African President Nelson Mandela. Well, my colleague Susie Hodges caught up with the artist in his Tennessee studio to find out more about his latest papal commission.
Well, I have started, but it's a long process, obviously, and mostly what's involved is thinking, of course, because of the theme, and everything in the portrait has to contribute to the idea of subject matter in a portrait. And how I usually do, I get a lot of references and do some studies of the subject and incorporate it in the appropriate composition. And particularly in this portrait, because just like the portrait of Pope John Paul II, it will be a multi-figured portrait. It's not just a portrait of a person, there will be other people around.
Who are these other people?
Those would be imaginative people, but they will be representing values, the traditional values of Christian Church, something that was promoted by Pope John Paul, now by Pope Benedict.
What aspects of Pope Benedict's personality are you trying to highlight in this portrait or to portray in some way?
Well, I would say that Pope Benedict is known as a scholar, as an educator. And just like Pope John Paul II, he's promoting those values, the traditional values, and being a leader of the church, and an educator. That's what I'm trying to incorporate in this work.
How did you feel when you were awarded this commission to paint this portrait? Of course, now your second portrait of a pope.
Yes, it's a great honor, of course. Inside it, the portrait of Pope John Paul, which hangs now at the Castel Gandolfo, at the oratory of the Pope John Paul Pontifical Center. It was a great honor, of course, to have my painting being hung like this for people to see, and particularly the youth. I understood there are more than 6,000 children a year see that painting there, which is incredible. That's the whole purpose of my work and what I do.
You met the Pope in person earlier this year when he sat for you and when you made sketches and took photographs for this portrait. What impression did you gain about him as a person, as a man?
I would say very similar feeling as I had when I met Pope John Paul, that incredible aura around him, just something so special it's even hard to describe. He's very quiet, he's got very warm eyes, very warm, extremely warm eyes, and when he touches your hand, it's like you don't even feel it, it's so gentle, you know. He's just an incredible person, and like I painted many leaders, presidents and prime ministers, and to me it's most important is basically I look at the person and then the titles, who they are. With the popes, there is something like you can't really compare them to others, something extremely special about them.
As you mentioned, you also painted a portrait of his predecessor, Pope John Paul. How does the portrait of Pope Benedict compare with this? Are they similar in style? And what about the differences or similarities between the two men?
Talking about the style, they similar in the style in the sense that they all are promoting same is, again, talking about those values. Like in the portrait of Pope John Paul, there are the youth surrounding him. They represent love, the mercy, strength through suffering. And in the portrait of Pope Benedict, there is a similarity in that sense. He's not by himself. He's surrounded by the youth. He's a father. And also there will be some dedication to Pope John Paul in that painting.
Do you have a religious faith yourself? And if so, how does that influence you in your work as a painter?
Yes, of course. Of course I do. Of course, you have to have a faith to paint the leaders of the church. What I do is basically the realistic style, the realistic art is the promotion of the beauty of God's creation. Somebody said it was, in fact, it was a young boy, it was about 12 years old. Somebody asked him, who do you think is the greatest artist? And he said, well, the greatest artist is God. What can be more beautiful than what he created? And just look around you. And what I do in my art and my work is trying to project that beauty on a canvas.
Susie Hodges talking there to Russian-born artist Igor Babaylov. That's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, for today, but we'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow. And don't forget, you can always find us on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.